The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Breath of resilience in the face of death. We have author Alan Rai in studio at Freedom 106.5 FM. And for those who are locked on to our Facebook page on Freedom, welcome and good morning to you. Going to log in just a couple minutes so you could send your comments and, of course, questions there as we talk to Mr. Rai. So I'd like to welcome you. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, now we can hear you. Come as close as you can to the mic. So, you know, your voice sounds nice and robust. So, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, tell us a little bit about who Alan Rai is. I know that we have a bio, and this is really about the book, but I want to know who Alan Nathan Rai is, you know, why you decided to write, and, yeah, why this story?
Well, this story itself is an incredible story in itself. In terms of the message it carries, all right, just to give a little bit of the book, I spent 18 consecutive days in three different hospitals and one step-down facility during the pandemic, all right? And I was told on several occasions that I wasn't going to live past 3 to 5 days. All right, so
and the most scariest time in modern history, COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And do you know how you got it? What was the process with that? Because I know a few people who've had it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I had family members who passed from it, and I, because of the isolation, didn't quite understand what was happening. So probably you can tell us from that perspective.
Sure. I was an essential worker at the point in time. So we was working right through. I was out in the field a lot. So it was not a matter of if you get COVID, but more of a matter of when. And unfortunately, I felt fall into that situation. With that being said, now, I suffered. It have no way to sugarcoat this. I suffered, and because I suffered that much, it humbled me and changed my perspective on life and how to view things, and it show you how fragile one life is and how fragile one health is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something we often take for granted. So when you ask me the question about the book, this is the message I more or less want to share, you know, to appreciate the people and your loved ones, because those to me was priceless, right? There was a part of the book where I was more or less paralyzed, where only my mind was working, but my body was not complying at any point, right? So, you know, that's a scary situation to be in.
Yeah.
You know, being a normal.
It's almost like I'm locked in syndrome.
Right. Yeah. And you're surrounded with people in similar situations. And that alone, the only thing that passed through my mind at that point in time was my loved ones. I didn't care about bills, I didn't care about car, house, or anything, but more of my loved ones, you know, and that is more or less the message I try to share with the book, because I watch people that seem to be healthy in the hospital, and they was walking and talking, and 2 days after, they was wrapped up in a sheet, and watching people take the last breath and think, this is, it's traumatizing, you know, and for those who unfortunately weren't able to share their story, I said, you know what, I will take it upon myself to share a story for them, you know, well, through me and my experience, but, you know, a lot of people tend to say you had COVID and you're in your hospital, but this book giving a detail of what the medical staff went through, what the patients went through, the conditions they worked in, the conditions the patients was in, you know, and this was in the height of COVID where it had no visitors, no phones was allowed, the regiment was guarding the hospitals. So, you know, this more is giving a very detailed description of what was going on.
Now, just to quickly look at the bio that you have, you said in 2024 at 35, Alan recounts a pivotal chapter of his life during the COVID-19 pandemic in Trinidad and Tobago. This memoir unfolds through his weeks-long hospitalization across various facilities, revealing the delicate balance between life's fragility and the resilience of the human spirit. Through a blend of pain, hope, and unexpected humor, the author shares a deeply personal journey that highlights the strength found amidst adversity. This narrative, while not a critique of institutions, aims to inspire by showcasing how courage and perseverance can illuminate even the darkest times. Join Alan in this emotional exploration of survival and transformation. I would think that for you to write this book, you had to understand that you were going through different phases.
Correct.
Can you describe the different phases for us?
Of course. With no shame, the first phase was fear. Mm-hmm. Because at that point in time, all I was hearing was numbers. How much 50 people die today, 100 people die. And so you don't know if this is your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because of the lack of communication, you're alone. So I have no shame to say, yes, I was scared.
That isolation did, you know,
mentally,
wonders.
Yeah, mentally, emotionally.
Imported, you know, yeah.
It challenged you. Mm-hmm. It challenged me to every stage of life in terms of mentally, spiritually, physically, you know. It challenged. So at a point in time, it might sound funny, while I pray, mm-hmm. simple as pray, I was talking to God. Because, I mean, there's very little else you could do. Your mind working, you're mm-hmm. humble to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I talking to God, but it wasn't more of a humbling prayer. I was like, God, you really want to let a super cool take me out? You serious? Like, who's this one, boy?
The conversations that I get, like, is your brethren you're talking to?
Yeah, because at that point in time, it wasn't like, save me. It was like, if this is what had to happen, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to happen, but, you know, I accept it however it is. Look over my loved ones, kind of way. That was the state of mind I was in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was the situation. So with that now, it humbled you. It grinded you down to let you know that how much we take for granted on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And it just changed my whole life, my perspective on life and how things should be and how people should think. Because I think we more or less get tied up in our lives being so busy and having objectives that we often take for granted our loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
We don't take that time to rest and look back and say, hey, you know, mommy this, daddy that, brother this, sister that. You know, like, when I say check on them genuinely, check on a loved one, mm-hmm. a friend, a girlfriend, anybody. Just genuinely check on them. And you wouldn't believe how much that moral support could take somebody.
Yeah. That phone call
or
that text message
mm-hmm.
or even I mean, some people don't like it, the pop-ups. You know, when you reach in front of the house and say, hey, where are you going?
Well,
let's go for a drive.
I respect people's things, but
the
simple reach out, because I would say there were times where things was grim. A doctor come and talk to me and let me know you may not make it through the week. How are you accepting and processing that information?
That's the next question. Right? How do you process that?
Right, and at that point, I didn't have a phone to contact my family members because they limit phone contacts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't reach out to my mother, my father, nobody, and say, well, this is the situation, so I just have to accept that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But once there's a will, there's a way. So, you know, certain nurses and doctors assisted in terms of sending a little information, like, hey, your parents or a friend reach out and they say, mm-hmm. hey, you can make it, you can push through, you have more to do in this life. And because of that level of moral support, give me that little extra fight.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, I lying down and I see it and I think them are like, nah, boy, I have to force this to the max, you know, mm-hmm. I have to make this happen.
Were you able, the first stage was fair. What was the next stage? Because my next question would have been, how mobile were you able to get up and read or just on the bed?
Just lie down on the bed. As I seen, I was more or less paralyzed, but not declared paralyzed.
Okay,
reason my motor skills was so limited
mm-hmm.
that I couldn't hold a cup of water and drink. I was just on the bed. I could not adjust the way I was lying down. This is the condition I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And at certain points, not to highlight anything negative, but they would have dropped like a cup of tea and the food, and I would stay there because I was unable to physically feed myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stay there till the next rotation. And that happened for a period of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then with those who were on the outside, who mm-hmm. were in isolation, quarantine, staying at home, were hearing stories of, well, on the staff, the amount of stress that staff was under, you know, they wanted volunteers, but because of how contagious COVID was, it was not suggested. So I am wondering, how was it really to get that assistance? You know, how did you get the assistance to pull that stretch? Because I'm trying to process it at the same time.
What I can say, and I can only go by what I saw, these nurses and the doctors and everybody, every part of that medical team, they worked to the bone. I am telling you, this is what I saw. Like, they're seeing the exhaustion and they're seeing that the frustrated, but they still came and performed their duties to the max. And I'll give you a little story. Part of the book as well. I had fever for 6 days plus, unbreakable fever, meaning I was taking medication, it wasn't breaking, I was doing all kind of thing, nothing, right? This one particular nurse, unfortunately, I didn't get her name, but if you know why, she came and checked me in the night, about 10, 11 o'clock in the night, right? Fever not breaking, she came and she explained to me, she said, Mr. Rai, if this fever go to your brain, there's very little we could do for you. If that go to your head, you know, we don't know. It could do some damage. Sorry, no problem. And she put me onto a wheelchair. She helped me onto a wheelchair and pushed me to the bathroom. Right? And opened some cold water and beat me for about 15 minutes. Nothing sexual or anything. She just, you know, she performed her duty. And she said, you know, don't dry your skin. Stay damped.
As cool as possible.
Right. Put me back on the bed. And that time it had rain and it was Trinidad was going through a little bit of a storm situation. And the next morning, my fever broke. Now, she didn't have to do that, and she did that on her own accord by herself. And for that, I think that was part of the process in assisting my recovery. You know, so this is just an example of what they did. As in, they went above and beyond. She didn't have to do that. She could have just keep giving me tablets and, well, what happened to you happened to you.
Yeah, and go on to the next patient.
Yeah.
And be the same, I guess, in priority level, who gets what.
Yeah.
Now, that leads to a question with no, as you mentioned in the book, you didn't want to bring a critique of institutions. But from your observations, what kind of protocol you think they can learn to put in to, practice? God forbid another, event like this happens.
Without putting anyone on the spot, I have seen some negative parts of the medical system that can be improved. I don't think I'm in a position to explain what, but maybe a little better in the bedside manner. Maybe, you know, but again, under the conditions, nobody prepared our country for COVID or even the world. So I can't put blame to anyone. You know, we adapted so quickly and it's something so unknown. It would be unfair to tell anybody that this could have been better when it wasn't prepared for. You know, so with that, now we're here today. And again, this book is also a reminder of what we went through as a people, as a country, but what we also overcome. Because we are here
as
today.
As a country,
And we bounced back.
We did a whole lot better than some other countries who were further developed than us. And that's one of the accolades, if I could use that word, you know, to how as a quote-unquote third world country dealt with the pandemic. I'm going to read a little excerpt from one of your chapters. This is chapter 3, Life at Cora. And Cora, well, we know Cora is really out of the way.
Yeah.
So that was isolation in itself. In the morning around 7 o'clock, the sun had risen, casting its reassuring light upon the world. But in my world, I was not reassured that it was going to be a good day. It was the first day in Cora. I had heard rumors about this facility by... heard about this facility by watching the COVID-19 reports and updates on television. Now I was sitting on a bed in this dreaded place. The hospital rooms were set up in sections. Each section was outfitted with 6 to 8 beds. They were lined side by side. I couched myself on the bed with my breathing labored and my movements restricted. I found I would think this is myself, utterly unable to walk or even hold anything. I was overwhelmed by a frightening level of fatigue and weakness with still a violent cough and fever. How did I reach to this stage? I pondered. I surveyed the pale white room, overwhelmed by a profound sense of despair. An able-bodied strong man like me was now diminished to a frail shadow of his former self. And when you say former self, I guess you were very active, athletic.
Yeah.
You sort of gym out.
Well, not gym, but like going a little hike and beach hunting a lot, like the swim, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a super fit guy, but I was active. I like to run or play a little football, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so to go from active to not being mobile, that the worst thing could ever happen to an athlete or anybody that is physical.
Yeah. And from the stage of fear, you went into acceptance.
Yes.
How that process was for you?
In terms of acceptance, I did a lot of reflecting in terms of my life, what I have done, what could have been done. And I mean, I reached a stage where it's no longer me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of the situation and how I deal with it and how I accept it, because denying it is not going to change the situation.
Yeah.
You know, my focus was more on is not giving up, fighting with all my might in terms of willpower and trying to, you know, come out of the situation if possible. That was more or less the mindset for acceptance.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls and messages as well. You know, I guess it's the, as you say, share the experience, and maybe those out there who also went through COVID and know of others who went through the COVID could give us some feedback on how they themselves got through the process. And the next step would be, you know, how you decided to, all right, been given this chance, second chance at life. What do you plan to do next? We'll be right back.
Glycast is a non-selective systemic herbicide that controls annual and perennial grasses and broadleaf weeds. Glycast is absorbed by the foliage with rapid translocation throughout the plant. Plant death occurs slowly over a period of 1 to 2 weeks. Glycast can also be used as an aquatic herbicide. Glycast is very cost-effective and is sold in foliage appeals, thus giving farmers value for money. Glycast is exclusively distributed by Cass Agricultural Supplies Limited and is available at all leading agro shops. Telephone 673-6802 or 354-5813.
Calling all parents. It's time to get your little ones Easter ready for the most creative way possible.
With Slam 100.5 FM and 9-5 The Ultimate Ones Bullets and Basket Pageant.
This beloved Easter tradition is back.
But this year, we're raising the bar.
We are challenging you to design the most extravagant bonnet or basket and join us at C3 Center for the parade.
Here's how to enter. Register online via the link on our social media pages.
Select your category and provide your contact details.
Check your email for confirmation and we'll let you know if you made the cut. Only 40 participants will qualify for the Slam 100.5 FM and 9-5 The Ultimate Ones pageant day. Happening Saturday, April 12th, so sign up early.
Crowning glories will be awarded to the most creative male and female, most original and most outstanding
Easter Prince and Easter Princess,
and the People's Choice winner.
Your location, C3 Center, San Fernando.
Time 3 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Categories from babies to kids up to 12 years old.
And deadline for registration is Wednesday, April 9th.
Don't miss out. The fun. Get crafting.
Get creative and get ready to shine.
Stay connected via our Slam 100.5 FM and 9-5 The Ultimate Ones Facebook and Instagram pages for updates.
Need more information? Call 760-3821. That's 760-3821.
The Bonnets and Baskets Easter pageant is on Slam 100.5 FM and 9-5 The Ultimate One.
It's all powered by Burger King's spicy, fiery fish.
Are you tired of the same old boring drive home from work?
Work no further.
Get ready for the ultimate after-work rush with Freedom 106.5 FM's The Overdrive with Davey. Mondays to Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let Davey take you on a thrilling ride of non-stop entertainment and education. He covers the topics of the day, delves into the latest food and lifestyle trends, and brings dynamic guests from exciting professions to share their professional stories and experiences. Take advantage of this energizing and engaging experience. Tune in to Freedom 106.5 FM, Mondays to Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for The Overdrive. Overdrive with Davey. The ultimate way to end your day with a bang.
This is The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
All right. No, not Soul Sister just yet. Welcome back, TNT, to Freedom 106.5 FM. We are inside the session called The Book Club. And with me, I have Mr. Rye. Alan, Nathan, right? I got to call you Nathan first. So that way I make sure and check. So if you're just joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM, he's written a very intimate description of how he was resilient through the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is an account of how he showed resilience in the face of death. And one of the last comments or one of the questions we closed off before the break was trying to get to the different steps of the process. So we dealt with fear, then acceptance. And now we're talking about how you motivated yourself. You've gotten the second chance of life to say, this is what I want to do with this chance. Because when we were slightly talking off here too, I wanted to find out how you're motivated. Have you had no TV? Yeah, no WhatsApp? I mean, phone non-existent. All of the things that we're addicted to. How you got through that without those tools?
Well, it's simply to see that I bonded with fellow patients.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I remember a lot of us, we go into the same situation. We have all we have is time, limited time technically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started to bond, share stories about our families and our life experiences and what we could do when we get out, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had a little bit of a bro code, like, you know, we bonded on that situation. So that kind of helped with the process of motivation, mm-hmm. you know, just the simple idea of knowing that you alone not going through the situation, you know. Mm-hmm. And we all, because we shared our experiences and our lives and stuff, that kind of give us something to look forward to. So mm-hmm. that alone in itself is our motivation.
Could I say that carnival was a motivation?
It truly was. I ain't even ashamed to say. The first carnival after COVID, I jump up first.
Mm-hmm.
I pay for my costume, I jump up, I do everything.
Right?
Everything.
Because, I mean, as much as people knock it sometimes, mm-hmm. that is one of the times that country actually comes together genuinely
mm-hmm.
to share that energy of celebration.
It's true.
And that particular carnival was a celebration because many people said, "Hear what? I am not going to be down anymore because this isolation taught us that there's only one life to live."
Yeah.
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 I have some comments coming in at 306-1065. If it is, you have calls as well. It's 625-2257. And of course, 627-3223 and 306-1065. One person says, "Good day. I was one of the many COVID response registered nurses. And till this day, I am in fear every time a patient comes into the hospital with certain symptoms. Congratulations on your book and looking forward to give it a read soon." So, yeah,
that's positive. You see, this book also gives a bit of insight on both the medical staff, what they went through, mm-hmm. and again, the eyes of the patient. So you're not just getting one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting a little bit of the both worlds. So a lot of people in the medical field would understand, hey, yeah, boy, these are the conditions you worked in, and this is what we went through. And obviously, as a patient, you experiencing it as a patient now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even though the book is basically based on COVID-19, I think it can give a lot of help to anybody that's in the hospital, even up to today, for any lengthy period,
mm-hmm.
because it gives you a little insight. It gives you, let's just say, you had dialysis, and that going to the hospital every once a week or a month or whatever the case may be. You know, sometimes you just see this person going in the hospital for that, not knowing what their mental state is in.
Mm-hmm.
And this book actually giving you a little bit of insight to help you understand your loved one that is going through a situation, whether it could be cancer, whatever the case is, and it could help you bond with them a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also how to give advice as well, because people who are not going through that particular really sometimes don't know what to say.
Correct.
Yeah, let's take a phone call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Morning to you and the guest there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Little theory, little question. I 6 years and 10 age, of the age, right? Of age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a healthy, every day I used to walk 4 and 5 miles, 6 miles. I smoke, hardly drink, take care of myself health-wise. And since I took that vaccine, I shouldn't call it vaccine, the vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get an illness that where my blood, the red cells is lower than the white. Roughly every month now, I just had to go and get a blood transfusion.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly 6 weeks, a month, I'm going to how it takes time. And I was healthy, healthy. And since I took that vaccine, and I know a lot of people who have different symptoms when they took that vaccine.
Thanks so much for your call. Now, on the global side of it, we do get stories mm-hmm. like that and experiences like that where, unfortunately, because of whatever reason, there's some sort of adverse reaction. But there are other times where the vaccine has saved a lot of people. By taking that, they prevented infection.
Mm-hmm.
And from the experience of seeing patients go through the process, was it a good idea? Do you think it would have been a good idea to take that vaccine?
Well, I could only speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
When I got sick, I got one shot of the vaccine. All right. Mm-hmm. I believe they label it as critical COVID, the one I got, right? It have different strains. And I spoke to the doctor about it, whatever the case is, and they recommend that I take the second shot, even though I got COVID after the first one. Right.
Okay, repeat that. You got COVID again.
No.
Oh, the vaccine.
The vaccine, right. Yeah. But they asked me to take the second shot. Even after I recovered from COVID,
mm-hmm.
they recommend that I take another shot.
Mm-hmm.
I did follow the instructions. So
I'm thinking, because a lot of people are still trying to figure out, how was it possible for me to even get the COVID in the first place, because
mm-hmm.
many have said that I was healthy, you know, I didn't, as the caller say, I didn't smoke, I didn't this, that,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't in the vicinities or huge crowds. How did I get this thing? Did it go through your mind and you try to analyze every single step? Did you go through that process as well?
I did, because I had a lot of reflecting to do while I was in the hospital, and I narrowed it down. I could be wrong. I narrowed it down to probably a canned food in the grocery. That's the only side story. I was one of those who was wearing gloves, masks, and sanitizing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I make groceries, I go in home and wash my groceries because I didn't want to put myself or my family at risk. So I was one of those.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I find I had a chink in my armor, I should say, I went to the grocery and I pick up a tin, I can't believe it, tin, I don't know, probably like peas and carrots or something. It was a canned food. And I went home and I didn't wash that can or anything, and I went and organized. So I don't know if that was the only time I could have think, or it could have just been circumstance and life where it's inevitable, it just happened. But that's the only time I could have really think, well, yeah, boy, that happened.
Because some people, free and clear, you know, they didn't get sick, they didn't take the vaccine. What were you telling me about wearing mask and just, and did not get sick? So it's really like a random...
It is.
Call of the jaw. Did you argue with God?
I did.
And say, why?
Before acceptance, we had a back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And within that back and forth, Trinidad was under a storm watch.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could pull it up in 2021, it had a storm watch in the first week of September. That's mm-hmm. part of the book as well. And I was like, really? What's going on with you, boy?
Mm-hmm.
Really? A cool boy?
Yeah.
You know, I survived all kind of thing. I went through all kind of thing in life. As a man now finished school, you really go and wait till I do all them exams to take my auto course, boy.
And I sacrificed and I didn't go to this party. Yeah, this, that.
All of that. Yeah. You know, you started the question. So,
did you think of, like, the loves of your life that you're... Lucky starter?
Part of my love life is in the book. So those who are interested in a little bit of my love life, that's part of the book.
You blushing too?
Yeah.
So now that you have the second lease on life, can you tell us a little bit about what goals you have, or some things that you've accomplished already,
mm-hmm.
and what you have planned for the future?
Sure. I am. The second chance, I had to laugh because it's how quick my life turned around. I have made a promise to myself that I want to be the best version of myself mm-hmm. in every aspect of my life. And I will always say that I am growing, I'm open to learning and experiencing everything, and I tend to remove limitations, mm-hmm. you know, as in, if I want to do this, want to not hurt nobody or myself, I am going to make every effort into making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And simple, a little bit of an example, I have a little phobia for heights. Well, I say, you know what? I go down skydive. So I decided to book a trip with some friends. We went Miami, break New Year's in Miami, and we skydive New Year's Day.
What was that like?
It was the most incredible feeling ever, because you felt so high, you felt so alive, you mm-hmm. felt like, you know, it take you out of your comfort zone. That's just an example, you know. And then from there, I started to get a little addicted to traveling, so I saved mm-hmm. a little more money. Mm-hmm. I went Bahamas and relaxed a little bit, you know. And it's not to say it's super costly, you know. I just I changed up my priorities a little bit, and I right. said, you know what, I want to experience. And I focus, you know, my income a lot in a lot of experiences. So I was like, you know what, and I try to allocate certain things as like every maybe once a year, every 2 years, I could visit somewhere where I always wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Panama and I do a little zip line from one building to the next. You know, I went and feed some pigs in the beach. Like, I just said, like, this is fun. You know, like,
I hear the pigs did very dangerous on that beach. You're not supposed to feed them.
No. I had fun. I had fun. If I could hug up one and carry it home, I would, but mm-hmm. that was nice. Like, you know, playful, like puppies, mm-hmm. believe it or not.
Pigs like puppies.
In the water, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's outside the water. But this is the goal I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took it upon myself. I said, you know what? Because of the lessons I have learned, I would like to share this lesson mm-hmm. without somebody having to go through what I went through. You know, like, you get a little shortcut to appreciate life a little bit. You get mm-hmm. a little shortcut saying, why work at 8 to 4 and go home and do the same thing for the rest of your life and not experience anything? Why you have to, you know, like in a robot mode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, life was made to experience. Life was made to live. Mm-hmm. Why are we like zombies? You just work on your home and maybe you go and drink a beer and come back. That can't yeah. be life, boy. It has yeah. to be more. It have to
more
be
of a balance. Yeah. And you realize that you weren't living that balance until you weren't able to do the very things.
Correct.
That brought that sense of, you know, life.
I took things for granted. I yeah. just was working and paying bills and just doing the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing, hey, just a few minor changes in your life, you could actually be happy.
Mm-hmm.
When last you look in the mirror and say, I happy, mm-hmm. I genuinely happy, I doing something I like, I doing something I love.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself that, and something I always wanted to do. And I made a promise to myself that maybe once a year, I want to do something new that I always wanted to.
Mm-hmm. So you have a bucket list.
I do.
Right.
And I started to tick like crazy after that COVID situation. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it is, again, this opportunity of life. Boy, we do have a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the next life. We could do this. You know, yes, have a lot of people believe in reincarnation and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we could talk about what we know now
yeah.
and what we're experiencing now. And I think live your life. Do everything in your power to be happy. You might have bad days.
Mm-hmm.
You do, that's life. But that's part of your journey. That bad day could be a lesson for you to be something better in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I had bad 18 days and I bring out a book from it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's how perspective. You don't let your bad days cripple you. You know, mm-hmm. you take a little blow. All right, what lesson I need to learn from this day? Maybe it could be patience. Maybe it could be all kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you move on from it.
Yeah, and then it's about dealing with human life as well, human interaction.
Okay.
So you found yourself changing how you interact with individuals as well?
Yeah.
What were some of the changes that you made?
Okay. Simple example. Okay, road rage. Just an example, right? Somebody might cut you off and drive foolishly, and the first reaction, you might want to cuss them.
Mm.
The level of understanding I try to reach, I'll be honest, I'll be guilty of it sometimes. I'll try to reach is, maybe this person having an emergency. It could be a medical emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something bad is happening to them and they just need to reach their destination. And, mm-hmm. you know, so this is just an example. You know, sometimes you might talk to somebody and they have a little mood. It's nothing personal to you, you know, but they're angry, not knowing when you're ready, have a conversation. What happened? My child in the hospital, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just giving you a little example. So sometimes a little bit of patience and understanding could take mm-hmm. you further than anything else. And a lot of us don't have an opportunity to express our challenges.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people tend to use it against us. You know, so this is where things get a little bit, how to say it, technical to a point.
Yeah.
You know, so you select a nice group of people that works with you, that comfortable with you, and surround yourself with winners, surround yourself with people who appreciate you and you appreciate them, and I believe things should be a little bit easier.
All right, so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue with the discussion as we talk about that bucket list and how do you write it. We'll be right back.
To Betterments with Old Space, Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Space tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Space, with a focus on education and resolution. This is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune into Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Bass Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you, only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters.
And welcome back. We're inside the Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. And if you're just joining me in studio with me, I have Mr. Alan Nathan Rye, who wrote a book that gives his account of his journey through the COVID-19 pandemic, being a patient at Cora Hospital, the most isolated spot in Arima.
And Cuba.
And also, it's okay.
Yeah, three different hospitals.
So three, did they transfer you or did you like leave and then had to go back?
I was transferred several different times.
Okay.
So my first night I was in Arima. And I'm selling out of my book, yeah, but I guess I'll tell you. The first night I spent in Arima, I spent a night with a prisoner. They locked me in a prisoner in a room. If you want to know the details, I know you have to check my book.
Check the book. Check the book with that,
that
one.
That's one. Mm-hmm. And then they sent me to Cora. So most of my time was in Cora.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they found out that I wasn't recovering the way I should. So mm-hmm. they sent me to Cuba to put some dye in my veins to see what was going on. And that's where they noticed I had blood clots in both my lungs and kidneys. All right. So that's where they say, okay, you know what? He didn't look like he gonna make it. So this is...
And then they gave you the diagnosis. So after mm-hmm. all of that, your arguments with God, your reconciliation with God, mm-hmm. and then you're thinking, I have to write a bucket list. You said that you're a working professional. Did it ever occur to you to say, you know, get rid of the man, editing, of course.
Yeah.
Down with the man, and I'm going to work for myself because I want more of my time. Did that go through your mind at all?
No, it didn't. Because, I mean, I still have responsibilities. So as a working professional, and I do love my job, mm-hmm. right? I am passionate about my job. So this book, more or less, was just like a medium to just share the message. That was my goal, you know, because mm-hmm. I have told my story to several different people, just hanging out, strangers, friends. And they all felt touched. They all felt like they learned something. And... Mm-hmm. They often tell me, hey, you need, this is a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here? Like, you know, we want to know more. And, you know, and I was like, you know what? I feel like I could write a little book on this situation. Just small talk, you know?
Yeah.
And the beginning of 2024, I made a promise to myself. I said, you know what? I'm going to do everything in my power to make this book happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of news. I got a lot of negativity. Yeah. No, that's not for you. You're not a writer. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Writing opportunities in Trinidad was limited. I was like, you know, I ain't letting that stop me. And I call everybody I know, every contact I have, if anybody could assist with writing a book in terms of like, give me a writing coach or to guide me and thing. Mm-hmm. And someone actually forwarded me a contact. mm-hmm. right? And that's where I end up starting. I do my write, I make a video just telling the whole story, and then I started to write it myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I end up hiring an editor just to edit things, so to say, all right, you can't put this, you might get sued.
Because you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
It's publication.
Right. So you know, you say, okay, you could edit this a little more, you could censor this, all right, you could tell this. I was like, cool. And from there, now they assisted me in like posting it up on Amazon, right? Currently, my book is in Scribbles and Quills. Mm-hmm. It is also in Nigel Arakan, so it's in bookstores. For those who are interested, you could always reach out. Mm-hmm. And if you want a signed copy, you could get one from myself. Mm-hmm. All right? And yeah.
And your tips on writing that bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
What are the guidelines you have for TNT? Because you could put a whole set of thing on it, but to streamline it, how did you do it?
Okay, so my bucket list wasn't like a physical bucket list. What I do, I say at least one, well, every new year, like, you know, people say make a resolution or whatever the case is,
mm-hmm.
I just take it personal. So I just want to do one big thing a year, and I focus a lot of my energy and my efforts for that one big thing, no matter mm-hmm. what it is. So for some people, it might be purchasing a vehicle. Some people might be getting their own place. Some mm-hmm. people might want to travel for the first time. But at least once a year, do something for your personal goal that you want to do, something you always want to do. And I just try to stick to that as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I guess with your experience, you directed yourself away from what you would call fickle goals.
Mm-hmm.
So like probably buying a car or buying the latest sneakers wouldn't be on your list because you realize, you know, what was important mm-hmm. and what was not
mm-hmm.
and decided, well, okay, I think I'm going to invest because, and I'm sure that investment making sense now because the kind of direction economically the world seems to be going into. Yeah?
Yeah, correct.
Mm.
So this is where it goes back to self, but you're going back to yourself in terms of happiness and then what makes you happy, what drives you, what motivates you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just say, boy, this is to pay bills and work and that. Nah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
it's more than that.
You need to see what you're working hard for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You need to see that and you need to appreciate the people around you because these are the priceless things, you know.
Yeah, your relationships, how you communicate.
Yeah. Everything is important until you're in the hospital fighting for your life. Nothing else matters at that point in time, you know, mm-hmm. beside your health and your loved ones. And keep that message, I'm telling you. I went through it, so I could tell you.
All right, so the name of the book, Breath of Resilience in the Face of Death by Alan Rye. As you said, you could get it at Scribbles and Quills. Mm-hmm. And
Nigel Arakan.
Nigel Arakan. Do you have any, like,
Amazon
Facebook?
As well.
Yeah. Do you have Instagram, that kind of thing?
My social media handle is mm-hmm. Alan N. Rye, AllanNRAI, on mm-hmm. all social media. Feel free to send me a DM, message if you have questions about the book. I do encourage it. Mm-hmm. All right, and yeah.
Is this you on the cover?
I am behind the book.
But it's honestly, it gave a whole Bollywood
a
stepping
little,
out.
A little something.
Yeah. In a good way.
Yeah.
In a good way. All right, Mr. Wright, thank you so much for joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM and giving us the lowdown on the book and giving us encouragement as well.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.